Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today we'll discuss the article by Hannah et al. Titled Validation of Diagnostic Criteria and Histopathological Characterization of Cardiac Rupture in the Mouse Model of Non-Reperfused Myocardial Infarction. This article was published September 4th, 2020. Joining me today are Deputy Editor Mary Lindsay, Lead Author Nick Frangoyannis, and Expert Christy DeLeon-Pinnell. Let's get started.
Thank you, Kara. The Frangoyannis Lab performed an in-depth histopathological examination of cardiac rupture in the mouse model of permanent occlusion myocardial infarction. They compared the histological examination to findings obtained from gross visual inspection. From there, they developed diagnostic criteria for the field to use when assessing rupture. Nick, tell us why these criteria are needed.
Thank you, Mary. For this study, we were motivated by the confusing information on the causes of death in infarcted mice. We validated the visual inspection criteria versus the gold standard, which would be a very systematic histology examining the heart from base to apex.
Well, Nick, I certainly want to tell you that with today's discussions ongoing about rigor and reproducibility, this is certainly a timely article. And from the MI field, I definitely thank your lab for taking on the labor of doing this assessment. This was a very extensive assessment that you all performed. Christy, for you, what was the important take-home message when you read this article?
For me, the two take-home messages were that true rupture rate for male 57 mice is around 35%, and that we need to be more systematic in our evaluations. That number of about 1 to 3 is similar to what my lab actually sees. Nick, what can you tell us about ruptures in humans with MI?
Yes, actually, that's a topic that has evolved since reperfusion has been introduced and became the standard of care. So in the pre-reperfusion era, the incidence of rupture was quite high. It's described in old studies back from the 60s and 70s as being almost 20%. At the time, there were a lot more transmural infarcts, whereas today it's reported to be as low as 1%. One reason why it is getting so much lower is because our definition of MI includes many patients with smaller infarcts and myocardial injury that is documented through very sensitive criteria, enzymatic criteria. So something I hear mostly from clinicians is, wow, the incidence of rupture in the mouse model is so high. And, you know, we don't see that in patients. And could this reflect the unique characteristic of the mouse that would actually could represent a problem when doing translation? And although I have the impression that there may be a component of exaggerated protease responses in the mouse, which has not been really documented. It's more of an impression that one may have. The very high incidence shouldn't really be that surprising if one considers the context of the animal model and how it differs from the typical patient with MI. So our model has all the characteristics of the human patient who can rupture, and you don't see these patients that often anymore. The mice have no previous MI, no hypertrophy to protect them, and they develop a large transmural infarct due to a relatively proximal occlusion of a single vessel in the absence of collaterals. So in most of the patients, you don't have this type of scenario. If you had this type of scenario in patients, you probably would get a very high incidence of rupture as well. The typical patient who has rupture is somebody with a first MI, who has a relatively normal heart, doesn't have significant hypertrophy, and doesn't have significant collaterals. Also, another factor is that our patients, thankfully, remain in the ICU when they have an MI. They are resting, at the very least, they're resting in bed. Whereas our mice, they remain active, and this could have an impact affecting blood pressure fluctuations and increasing the incidence of rupture. So with this, I want to point out that it is not such a unique characteristic of the mouse that could in any way reduce its value as a model, as a translational model. Also, something else that is important to recognize is that rupture may be uncommon in the clinic. Its incidence may be relatively low, but because it is so deadly, it still accounts for a high percentage of mortality, both in hospital mortality and also, based on some studies, pre-hospitalization mortality. So the studies on in-hospital mortality suggest that anything from 5 to 20% of in-hospital mortality is due to rupture. And that's very, very important for an uncommon complication. And we probably underestimate this mortality because many deaths pre-hospitalization may be due to rupture. And some of the autopsy studies have suggested that there are in human patients early deaths occurring in the first 24 hours that we typically don't observe in the animal models, which are quite often due to rupture. So it is very important to understand its pathogenesis, maybe uncommon, but it's a major cause of mortality and has remained so even in the current era.
Those are all excellent points, Nick. And certainly in the MI field, using the permanent inclusion model in mice is seen as a way to reflect those patients who are not timely reperfused or who go on to develop heart failure. And then certainly, as you mentioned, those who don't even make it to the hospital. So Nick, your study revealed that identifying the rupture site had high specificity but low sensitivity, whereas seeing the blood clot in the chest, that was assessed as low specificity but high sensitivity. Explain more what this means to the trainees who are listening in on this podcast.
What this means is that if you see a rupture site, then you have documented rupture. This would be confirmed if you did the histology as well in the vast majority of cases. So it is truly very specific. It's unlikely that this is a false positive. However, there are a lot of false negatives. You will miss a lot of mice that also had rupture, but you could not see the rupture site upon visual inspection. And this is not that surprising if you look at the histology. In many cases, the rupture sites are so narrow, and in some cases, they also have some tortuosity, as we found out. You have to go at several different levels to find the track. So they may be difficult to detect upon visual inspection. And on the other hand, if you use blood in the chest as a criterion, or as one of the criteria, this will identify most of the mice with rupture, but practically it identifies most of the deaths because it's so nonspecific and will give you a lot of false positives.
And I was curious, if you combine both, does that mean high specificity and high sensitivity?
Yes, so that's a great question. And we're hoping that this could be the case. And with a combination of criteria, you could have a better specificity and sensitivity. Unfortunately, it was not the case. So when combining both, when using a combined criterion that required one or the other, either rupture or hemothorax, the low specificity of hemothorax remained the problem.
Well, Nick, those are certainly very interesting observations that have been made in terms of characterizing rupture. I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about sex differences. Can you summarize for us the key sex differences you saw in rupture?
Sure. So we found, as many other people have observed, and also it is common knowledge in anyone who is doing non-reperfused infarcts, that male mice had increased mortality, and also they had a higher incidence of rupture. And this was not due to differences in infarct size or infarct wall thickness. What we could not do is to perhaps link these to differences in inflammatory cell or myofibroblast density between males and females that died of rupture, because the deaths in female mice were low, where there was a small number of rupture-related deaths in female mice, so we're not powered to identify this type of difference. And on this, a comment from a clinician's viewpoint, so what you could hear from a clinician is that Well, again, this doesn't translate very well in human patients. The typical patient with rupture is an elderly woman who has no hypertrophy, it's her first MI, typically small, low body weight. And how about this being a species-specific effect or even a strain-specific effect that we have in mice, again, reducing the translational value of the mouse? Is it something unique to 57 BLAC6J mice? I do not think so. And I think it's actually translationally relevant, and I will explain why. First of all, it's not a strain-specific effect. I think most people have studied other strains, they always see that sex-specific predilection of rupture in male mice. And when we have used mixed strains of all types in our genetic manipulations, you see this time and time again. It's just the absolute numbers and the percentages of mortality that change, but always the males have higher mortality. In human patients, I do not think that the female predilection for rupture in human patients is something that is in conflict with the mouse data, because elderly women are postmenopausal, so that is clearly not in conflict with anything you find in premenopausal female mice. And also they have, for other reasons, a substrate that is more likely to rupture. They're actually closer to the mouse model that we're using. They more often have single vessel disease with fewer collaterals, a less hypertrophic heart, a less fibrotic heart. So the fact that they have later occurrence of coronary disease and perhaps lower severity of hypertrophic changes because of a lower incidence of hypertension in this group, and also a smaller body weight and heart thickness, this is what poses them at risk, and not some sex-specific action that may be hormonally mediated and that would be in conflict with the findings in the mouse. Thus, I believe that the mouse has a lot of things to teach us about specific hormonally mediated actions in repair that would be relevant in human patients, although we do not observe the same thing in the clinical context because of the differences in the population which are vulnerable to MI in the human disease.
I see. And in this study, you guys took it a step further and isolated at MI day four macrophages from four males and four females, and you did PCR array for chemokinin receptors to see if you could identify some inflammatory mediators that may distinguish male versus female response. Chrissy, this reminds me of some of the work that you've done in the past looking at sex differences. How does this study link in with what you've shown?
So when we looked at sex differences, we found specifically in female neutrophils or neutrophils from female mice that they had decreased expression of pro-inflammatory markers such as interleukin 6 and TNF-alpha, and they also were more efficient at cleaning up necrotic debris. So, Nick, you mentioned that you don't believe that it's necessarily estrogen dependent. And there has been some studies more recently that have tried to give women estrogen back and haven't really shown any beneficial effects. And in my lab, we're kind of interested in more of the X chromosome effects and the fact that we have two X chromosomes in women and only one in men, and how that may actually be changing with age. What are your thoughts about more of the chromosomal effects in sex differences?
I think to my recollection, the literature on this regarding the effects of estrogen is mixed. There are some people who have suggested that the protection may be estrogen driven, but I'm sure there would be other factors. One could perhaps implicate male hormones, on the other hand, as responsible for some type of reparative defect that may be in part related to the much higher incidence of rupture that you see in male mice. It's a very interesting finding. It's a very interesting observation that I don't think has been adequately studied. And It's not a simple one because it would require a quite complex manipulations, and possibly some of them would fail to produce a result. But you know how often we find such an impressive difference in an endpoint that is so critical, such as mortality, and how often do we have the opportunity to explore a potential molecular mechanism? So I commend you for exploring this direction, because it may hide a mechanism of perturbation of repair that may be applicable not only in explaining sex-specific differences, but maybe overall something that can be manipulated in patients with MI.
And to expand on that, the deaths that you found occurred between days 2 and 7, which is in line with what most others report. Nick, it was interesting to see that you saw more macrophages and fewer myofibroblasts. What, in your opinion, does this tell us?
Yes, Christy, this is an excellent point, that the mice that died of rupture had more macrophages and fewer myofibroblasts than the mice that died of rupture-independent deaths. And this supports the notion that there may be two major categories of mechanisms responsible for rupture. One involving high inflammatory activity, many macrophages, many of which may be pro-inflammatory. The other involving low matrix secreting capacity, evidenced by the fewer activated myofibroblasts. And I think what is most useful, because these associative data can only provide some support but do not dissect specific pathways, what is most useful is the tables, again, that Anis put together, very detailed the tables on the genetic studies that had have provided information on the pathogenesis of rupture. And these two general mechanisms are prominently featured in these tables: overactive inflammation on one hand, and the perturbation in matrix balance on the other hand, both in terms of reduced matrix synthesis and also, importantly, excessive matrix degradation through the actions of proteases. Of course, this is a bit oversimplified, because you need the level of inflammatory activation to repair the ventricle. So it's also obvious, and also to activate the fibroblasts. So it's also obvious from these tables that in addition to overactive inflammation, dysregulated inflammation, very low level of inflammatory signaling, or a perturbed balance of inflammatory mediators may also be a factor in the pathogenesis of cardiac rupture.
I certainly have enjoyed this conversation. I think you're preaching to the choir between me and Christy about the importance of the extracellular matrix and the balance between its degradation and its synthesis. So Nick, can you summarize for the audience what they should be doing for their gross inspection of rupture?
Sure. So obviously, you know, to document rupture, histology is the gold standard and it's optimal. However, it's impossible to do that in a study. When we do a study, we all work on large groups of animals, which is something necessary to derive robust conclusions in journals which are peer-reviewed in a robust manner, like AJP Heart. You cannot rely on data from just a few mice. So it is impossible to perform a systematic histologic analysis on all the mice that died. So this would require unlimited resources and the dedicated staff to follow the mice around the clock as if you know, they are patients in a unit. It's not feasible. So we are dependent on visual inspection to determine whether rupture has occurred. And I think what I would recommend is to have the data on total mortality and then to depend on identification of a rupture site as the criterion for rupture-related death. An alternative strategy is to use histology for part of the study. So, for example, one could have a certain number of consecutive deaths in both groups examined through histology, and that may be feasible within the constraints of a study. something else I have seen in the literature, but we have not attempted, I have seen it in a couple of studies, is some investigators doing an isolated heart injections in order to identify a rupture site. This seems to me also somewhat impractical, and it has not been done broadly. So to summarize, my recommendation is, when limited realistically in terms of doing systematic histology and with the need of being based on visual inspection to obtain conclusions, to prefer using the rupture site criterion because of its specificity.
Okay, there you have it. If you're evaluating rupture, look for a rupture site. Dr. Frango Yiannis, thank you for submitting your work to AJP Heart and CERC. Dr. De Leon Pinnell, thank you for discussing it with us. Back to you, Kara.
Thanks for listening. Would you like to hear more? Visit the AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology homepage for our latest episodes.